Out of the dark of the deep range and into the light of the deep strange. Cometh the hour, cometh the mothership that is Coast to Coast AM, and good evening to you. John B. Wells in the left seat tonight for number three of the trifecta, Zombie Jombie Weekend. Had a great time with you the last couple of nights. Dealing and speaking with the Coast audience could become habit forming. But you got to sleep sometime, you know? Plus, some of us work during the day, right? This will be an interesting program tonight. We have an hour of, news and chat with you, if you want to, for the first hour. But then, we're going to have Tom Horn and Terry Cook on the program. You can check out these websites while we wait for them. Number one is beasttechnology.com. Put a dash between beast and technology.com. RaidersNewsUpdate.com and SecondComingMinistries.com. Tom Horn is a researcher and freelance writer. His Raiders News Update report's been referred to many times by writers of the LA Times, Syndicate, WorldNet Daily, Christianity Today, even MSNBC. White House correspondents, dozens of news magazines and press agencies around the globe. He's been on numerous programs worldwide and once even served as national spokesperson for Cloud 10 Pictures movie Deceived, starring Louis Gossett Jr. and Judd Nelson. Remember Judd? Where is Judd? Should call us, Judd. We want to know where you've been. And then Terry O. Cook. He is a fundamentalist Christian intelligence analyst and a retired L.A. County Sheriff's Deputy Criminal Investigator. Also, former State of California Deputy Real Estate Commissioner, Fraud Investigator, Vietnam War Veteran, former California National Guard Officer, in anti-communist intelligence, licensed by the FAA as an airline transport jet pilot, that's an ATP for anybody who wants to know, and a flight instructor, over 3,000 hours of total flight time as well. So this will be some good stuff. You know, stuff like, in the future we will be tracked even more than we are now. Men and machines are merged. Do your pets go to heaven? Stuff like this. Oh, no, that's a nice thought. That is a nice thought. Let's see, it's going to be Duchess, Caesar, Cleo, Smokey, Cinnamon, Tiger, Lottie, Max, and Frankie. Frankie was quite a case. We were convinced he was actually a man in a dog suit. I'll tell you what, you better watch your wine glass around him, too. You just go around the room. First time somebody turned their back on their wine glass, well, Frank would be drinking it down. We're convinced he had a voice very much like this. More communicative with a glance than most people are with a couple of legal pages of stuff. Speech. Now, this just warms the cockles of my heart. It really does. You ready? Here it comes. Icelanders overthrow government and rewrite constitution after banking fraud. No word from U.S. media. I wonder why. Can you imagine participating in a protest outside the White House and forcing the entire U.S. government to resign? Yeah. Can you imagine a group of randomly chosen private citizens rewriting the U.S. Constitution to include measures banning corporate fraud? Yeah. Seems incomprehensible in the U.S., but Icelanders did just that. They forced their entire government to resign after a banking fraud scandal, overthrowing the ruling party, creating a citizens group tasked with writing a new constitution that offered a solution to prevent corporate greed from destroying the country. Well, the game is far afoot and we're way behind. The Constitution of Iceland was scrapped and is being rewritten by private citizens. No, I just want our constitution restored. I don't want it scrapped. I thought it was fine. Anyway, using a crowdsourcing technique via social media channels such as Facebook and Twitter, which, unlike Facebook and Twitter over here, apparently does not mess with the citizens. Why? Because Icelanders probably are the admins on it. These events have actually been going on since 2008, but there's no word from the U.S. mainstream media about any of this. In fact, all of the events that unfolded were recorded by international journalists, overseas news bureaus, citizen journals, and bloggers. This has created current accusations of an intentional cover-up of the story by mainstream U.S. news sources. Oh, I've got to step back from this. Are you serious? An intentional cover-up of a story by mainstream U.S. news sources? I just can't believe they would do such a thing. Not. All right. I digress. I'll stop. But listen up. An eye report on CNN written by a private citizen all the way back to May 2012 has questioned the reasons why this revolution has not been widely covered in the U.S., suggesting that perhaps the mainstream media is controlled by large corporate interests and thus has been unwilling to report on Iceland's activities. While that report is currently making its way around social media, CNN Today placed a statement on its website saying, "We've noticed this eye report is being shared widely on Facebook and Twitter. Please note that this article was posted in May 2012. CNN has not yet verified the claims, and we're working to track down the original writer." Well, keep on tracking. Okay, speaking of tracking, get this. Virginia cops encouraging citizens to take photos of other citizens taking photos. Yes, Virginia State Police released a new crime-fighting app that encourages citizens to photograph citizens who are legally photographing in public. The latest chapter in the war on terror that further criminalizes photography. But considering how local police are already collecting data from our cell phones, would anybody in their right mind download an app that would make it even easier for them to collect our data? Look into it, because it's coming to an oppressive local, state, or federal government near you. And you might not like that. You remember the, do you remember album covers? Are you too young to remember album covers? Are you a CD baby? Album covers. The shuck that housed the precious vinyl. Well, an Australian psychedelic artist named Martin Sharp, a founder of the controversial Oz magazine, who designed posters and album covers for Jimi Hendrix, Donovan, and Bob Dylan, has passed away at age 71. This is from thetelegraph.co.uk, and this story came out on the 2nd. He also designed memorable album covers for Cream's Disraeli Gears and Wheels of Fire albums. He died on Sunday, December 1, following a prolonged struggle against emphysema. He was born in Sydney in 42, and after leaving the private Sydney Boys School, Cranbrook, Sharp studied at the National Art School in East Sydney. He and fellow artist Gary Sheed helped start an unofficial student newspaper at the school called the Artie Wild Oat. He came to prominence in the 60s after founding the famed Oz magazine with Richard Neville and Richard Walsh. The trio were twice charged with printing an obscene publication and a 1964 cover showing Neville and two friends seemingly relieving themselves on a sculpture provoked fierce controversy. Once his convictions were overturned on appeal in 66, Sharp moved to London, where he and Neville established London Oz along similar lines. In 69, Sharp withdrew from the magazine and his place was taken by Felix Dennis. Anyway, the artist was outspoken in the cause of civil liberties and Aboriginal rights, saying once, "Art has been my way of having a say." He lived in Sydney for the final 4 decades of his life, and among his work was one of the versions of the iconic clown's face entrance to Sydney's Luna Park, a fatal fire in the park's ghost train in 1979, in which 6 children were lost, changed his outlook on religion and made him a firm believer in God. "We've lost a major figure and a great character," said Wayne Tunnicliffe, head of Australian art at the Art Gallery of New South Wales. So long, Martin. Good stuff. Your legacy remains. Tell you what then, before it becomes Commercial City, why don't we go ahead and just pause. Have a lot more for you here, including all of these. Wait till you hear about the killer winter storms and how long they are prognosticated or otherwise predicted to last. But let's put it this way. It puts a huge dent. In fact, I think it drives a stake right through the heart of global warming. On Coast to Coast AM, please stand by. Well, from the dailystar.co.uk, 30 years. Killer freezes, floods, and heat waves will devastate Britain during the next 30 years, climate experts have warned. And at least it's not coming out of East Anglia. Many people could die as extreme weather becomes common. Yes, death and serious injury can occur. There will be more freak winds like the October storm, which killed four people. Heat waves will be lethal, and the sea level will rise, leaving coastal towns at risk of being swamped by storm surges. Sir Brian Heap, president of the European Academy's Science Advisory Council, said he felt obliged to issue the warning after a new study by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Comes on the back of Typhoon Haiyan in the Philippines, which has killed more than 5,000 people. Sir Brian said, given the tragic events this year and the rest of the world, and the recent IPCC report, ESAC feels obliged to draw attention to the growing impact of extreme weather in Europe. The continent's leading expert has made a detailed study of likely extreme weather, he said. And furthermore, from the major loss of lives in heat waves to the economic and human costs of floods and storms, the implications are worrying. Well, at least he didn't say concerning. All right, did you know this? I've known this for years. See, by the time we hear about it, it's a done deal. FBI can secretly activate an individual's webcam, which is why mine has a little piece of tape over it. It's the same piece of tape that's been on there for, by the looks of it, years. Yes, the FBI can secretly activate a computer's webcam to spy on an individual without turning on the indicator light. Oh, that is sneaky. A former official revealed to the Washington Post in an article published Friday. According to the Washington Post's account of what Marcus Thomas, the former assistant director of the FBI's Operational Technology Division in Quantico, said, the FBI has been able to covertly activate a computer's camera without triggering the light that lets users know it is recording for several years, and has used that very technique mainly in terrorism cases, well, of course, or in the most serious criminal investigations. Because of encryption and because targets are increasingly using mobile devices, law enforcement is realizing that more and more they're going to have to be on the device or in the cloud, Thomas added, in reference to remote, storage services. There's the realization out there that they're going to have to use these types of tools more and more. I'm telling you, these terrorists are just running amok all over the countryside. The Blaze has previously reported on hackers using remote access tools to activate an individual's webcam and spy on them, but they did not mention the FBI in any of that. Now combine this with Virginia wanting to implement this app so that you can take photos of people taking photos. Let's just do one more, and that is cell phone data spying. It's not just the NSA. They're not the only government entity secretly collecting data from people's cell phones. Local police are increasingly scooping it up, too. Armed with new technologies, including mobile devices that tap into cell phone data in real time, dozens of local and state police agencies are capturing information about thousands of cell phone users at a time, whether they are the targets of an investigation or not, according to public records obtained by USA Today and Gannett newspapers and TV stations. The records from more than 125 police agencies in 33 states reveal about 1 in 4 law enforcement agencies have used a tactic known as a tower dump, which gives police data about the entity, identity, activity, and location of any phone that connects to the targeted cell phone towers over a set span of time, usually an hour or two. A typical dump covers multiple towers and wireless providers and can net information from thousands of phones. About now, I don't know about you, but about now, I'm thinking somebody is wondering, do I really need this thing? Answer, no. It was all getting done before, wasn't it? That's what I'm thinking. Anyway, back to the weather for a minute. Cold is rewriting Oregon history books. Texas is setting snow records. And a sleet, ice, deep freeze hit large swath of U.S., unbelievable, yeah? All right, well, what else? You might find this interesting. Area 51's biggest, stealthiest spy drone yet. This is from Friday. A drone that spied on bin Laden and on Iran's nukes was just the start. This is from foreignpolicy.com. Meet its bigger, high-flying, stealthier cousin, the Northrop Grumman RQ-180. It's probably been flying for a few years now, but you weren't supposed to know that. The existence of this secret project based out at, yes, Area 51 was revealed Friday by Aviation Week. The existence of the RQ-180 has long been rumored. Cryptic public statements by the U.S. Air Force indicates a secret high-altitude reconnaissance drone and Northrop officials frequently reference the broad strokes of the program. For that matter, it's not likely the only classified unmanned aerial vehicle, or UAV. Other companies, including Lockheed and Boeing, also have a stable of smaller secret aircraft. It's likely flying from the secret Air Force base at Groom Lake, Nevada, widely known as Area 51. Its exact specifications, including, you know, crucial details as the number of engines, is unknown. But Aviation Week suggests a span of its wings in excess of 130 feet, based on hangar construction at Northrop's Palmdale, California facility. The number of aircraft built is also unknown. However, a flight test program, relatively quick entry into service, and open budget documents suggest a small fleet are routinely flying. Remember, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about how these drones can stand off from 200 nautical miles and capture, through facial recognition, hundreds of impressions at one time. So it's just beyond everything, isn't it? And getting crazier. And just wait until we bring our guests on tonight. That would be Tom Horn and Terry Cook. I think this will be very entertaining and somewhat disturbing. Why don't we take a call? Why don't we talk to Mark in Oregon on wild card line number one? Mark, how are you?
Hey, good evening, John. Always great to speak with you, sir.
It goes both ways. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing really good tonight, John. Thank you. It's a blessed night, and I don't get that many of them, at least not in the past, all the way up to, you know, recent times, especially since 9/11. We've gone into fast forward in reality toward the negative, and negative is just a very euphemistic way of putting it, isn't it, John?
Yeah.
Downright liquid evil, eh?
Just well, like, you know, you can look at it this way, you know. Positive stuff is just negative stuff gone wrong, right?
Well, it intends to go wrong. And what's wrong is more and more often today I equate it in my perception with evil itself. But I'm sure we agree, at least on the basics and a lot of the details, John.
I think that instinct
there. As a brother in Christ, and I'm keeping it Christ-centered tonight because after hearing what Dr. Garrow had to say last night, after hearing, of course, he's a, you know, preeminent guest that you've had on in the last couple of weeks, and I don't miss any of your shows. They're all excellent. After the gentleman, I'm trying to recall, I had it in my mind just before, but he was involved in the Montauk Project.
Yeah. I know who you mean. We'll kick his name out here in just a minute, as soon as we grasp it.
We're having a dual mental block maybe here. We're busy otherwise. But at any rate, the gentleman said they have a system that the satellites project down mind control waves, basically, into large areas of the population of the planet, and that it works through certain cell towers, or all cell towers. Combined with what Dr. Garrow said, John, about the executive, and he said this because he knows that only the President of the United States can move nuclear weapons or can order them to be fired. And what he described, the good doctor did last night, was the fact that the President of the United States, and Alex Jones, of course, as you're aware, John, reported on this as it happened from his very high-level sources in the military who reported it to him to let it be known. And he never divulged those sources, but he said they were high up. And
yeah, unfortunately, I divulged a couple of them, but he said, I never speak the names, but they're already out there on the net, so.
Yeah. So we have the two generals and the whole scenario that Dr. Garrow described from the time the two generals were relieved of their command, why they were relieved of it, and then it all comes through the chain of very good corroborative evidence, in my view, that we have the President of the United States seeking to bring total destruction on this country within 2 weeks, John. And a number of experts are out there talking about the consequences of an EMP attack over this country or any country and what would happen. And two of the main things that always stick with me is that people would revert to cannibalism within 2 weeks, and that within 2 months to 12 months, 90% of the population would be dead. So considering that this has been tried from all of the best evidence, which, as I say, in my perception, it comes from an anonymous source, but again, it comes through Alex Jones, and Alex Jones doesn't have junk sources. And he's used them for years. I think he's used this source for years.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, going to your point, when we come back, because we've got to take a break, Mark, and thank you very much for your call. May you be blessed, sir. A method of recording brain activity could lead to mind-reading devices, Stanford scientists say. I'll give you some more detail when we come back. This is the Sunday night edition, beginning the week together. Yes, Sunday is the first day of the week. Sorry. I'm sorry, but it is. And this is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm not sorry about that. That's good. Yes, indeed. You know, this song may ring out. Is it truer or more true? Truer. True that, Paul. Yeah, Eastern Europe is going to become, by all predictions, it's going to become the jewel of that particular continent. As many say, particularly my man X, webmaster at Full Spectrum Dominance, with dashes between the words, says Western Europe's going into decline. We hope that this is not true. Maybe some Western Europeans will give us a jingle. But Eastern Europe's coming along. They're making deals and making waves. And Ukraine wants to become part of the EU. It's like you might want to hold off on that. Let's just kind of see how it goes. But anyway, back to that method of brain recording and reading. Get this. Stanford scientists say they have developed and are developing further a method of recording brain activity, and this could lead to mind-reading devices. I'm telling you, all of this science fiction stuff is coming true. Those great writers like Heinlein and Asimov and Bradbury and Arthur C. Clarke, all this stuff, and Philip K. Dick and many others, but particularly those dudes. If you'll excuse that unfortunate expression, because we know what a dude is. Those gentlemen. It's all coming to pass. Now get this. A brain region activated when people are asked to perform mathematical calculations in an experimental setting is similarly activated when they use numbers or even imprecise quantitative terms such as more than in everyday conversation, according to a study by Stanford University School of Medicine scientists. Using a novel method, the researchers collected the first solid evidence that the pattern of brain activity seen in someone performing a mathematical exercise under experimentally controlled conditions is very similar to that observed when the person engages in quantitative thought in the course of daily life. Quote, "We are now able to eavesdrop on the brain in real life," said Joseph Parvizi, MD, PhD, Associate Professor of Neurology and Neurological Sciences and the Director of Stanford's Human Intracranial Cognitive Electropsychology Program. Parvizi is the senior author of the study to be published in Nature Communications. The study's lead authors are postdoctoral scholar Mohamed Dastyari, MD, PhD, and graduate student Muj Ozkar. Yes? The finding could lead to mind-reading applications that, for example, would allow a patient who is rendered mute by a stroke to communicate via passive thinking. Conceivably, it could also lead to more dystopian outcomes, chip implants that spy on or even control people's thoughts. This is exciting and a little scary, said Henry Greeley, J.D., the Dean F., and Kate Edelman, Johnson Professor of Law and Steering Committee Chair of the Stanford Center for Biomedical Ethics. I feel like my mouth's run a mile. They played no role in the study, but is familiar with its contents. Described himself as very impressed by the findings. Quote, "It demonstrates first that we can see when someone's dealing with numbers, and second, that we may conceivably someday be able to manipulate the brain to affect how someone deals with numbers." The researchers monitored electrical activity in a region of the brain called the intraparietal sulcus. Sorry. Known to be important in attention and eye and hand motion, previous studies have hinted that some nerve cell clusters in this area are also involved in numerosity, the mathematical equivalent of literacy. "This is not real life," said Parvizi. "You're not in your room having a cup of tea and experiencing life's events spontaneously. A profoundly important question," he said, "is how does a population of nerve cells that has been shown experimentally to be important in a particular function work in real life. But anyway, they're going to proceed. These nerve cells are not firing chaotically. They're very specialized, active only when the subject starts thinking about numbers. When the subject is reminiscing, laughing, or talking, they're not activated. Thus, it was possible to know simply by consulting the electronic record of participants' brain activity whether they were engaged in quantitative thought during non-experimental conditions. You see where we're headed here? Parvizi says, we're still in the early days with this. If this is a baseball game, we're not even in the first inning. We just got a ticket to enter the stadium. Well, what a scary stadium it is. Let's talk to Josie on wildcard line number two. Tinfoil hat may be required in future, Josie. What do you think?
Hey, good evening to you, John B. I wonder if that song by the Kingston Trio was written for you, the Sloop John B.
I don't know.
Anyhow, I kind of think it could work both ways. Wouldn't it be nice if the public could know the minds of our politicians, and then we could act accordingly? Anyhow, that's just a thought.
Well, it's probably those records of what they were thinking would probably be sealed, much like the Kennedy documents, until 2150 or something, so that no damage can be done to them. You know, they're a tight little crew; they look after each other.
But I called an answer to Douglas Dietrich, at least one of the things. I mean, there were many things that I kind of thought, what? You know, he was like history was upside down from what we've all learned about various times of the Honolulu, the Japanese attack and on us and all of that. And one of the things he said was that they attacked the Panay, which was an American ship, Navy ship,
yeah.
And that it was deliberate, and they attacked a British ship because they didn't know if it was who was double-crossing them or what have you. And I thought, well, the attack on the Panay in 1937, well, we weren't at war with Japan at that time, although he says, I think, Dietrich said we were.
Well, we had Chenault over in China in those years.
But the attack on the Panay, after that happened, they were most distressed. They said it was an accident, and they collected money from school children in order to repay us, because they thought it was very important that they repay us. And if even if they had to collect money from school children to do the job, which they then did before we were in any real war. And I kind of think that sort of compares to the deliberate attack, which was not an accident, on the Liberty. And that's why I keyed into that, because my brother was a lieutenant on the Liberty and one of the 34 that were killed in international waters deliberately by the Israelis, which was covered up by our government, especially our top guy, Lyndon Johnson, who murdered on his way into office. So he didn't mind saying to the Admiral of the Sixth Fleet, with planes on their way to rescue the ship while it was under attack, he said, I don't give a damn if the ship sinks and every man drowns. I don't want to embarrass our allies, Israel. So he already knew it was Israel attacking us. That was rather interesting. And
yeah.
There's a whole, if you ever want to do a story, this is a cover-up, just like Benghazi, where the top guy, the president, is the one that says stand down, in essence. And that's why the Liberty was abandoned. So they were hoping to sink the ship and make it look like the Arabs did it, because no one would ever believe that the Israelis would deliberately attack us. Well, they're trying really, really hard to keep to the premise that it was an accidental attack. But there's so much evidence to the contrary that I could put you in contact with anybody that was a survivor of that attack that would be willing to testify or be on, on the air with you on another show if you're interested. I don't do computers. I don't do any of these devices that you say would be spies, turned into spy devices. I have a regular long line telephone, and I can leave the phone number with Gina if you should be interested, and you can go to the website on the Liberty, and they explain every single point of view from the Israelis to the Americans to everybody. And it's just USSLiberty.com or .org or whatever. And that gives you a lot of explanation. And then
that's
there's
fabulous.
Another one that I haven't seen at all because, as I say, it's USSLibertyVeterans.com or whatever they have. So I just thought you might be interested in that. And
I am.
I could. I know that your father was in the Navy. My father was class of 31 at the Naval Academy, same as John McCain. We're not too thrilled. I'm not too thrilled with him, with his son, the senator. But in any case,
me either. Mr. Co-author of the NDAA. Thanks, John. Appreciate you. Yeah, if you would, you didn't let her go, did you? She's still there?
My brother was a class of 63, and Chick Burlingame, whose plane was forced into the Pentagon on 9/11, was a class of, about some years after that. And both of those young men were attacked by Middle Easterners, and both of them were born on September 12th. Well, who knows what coincidences those are.
Right.
I thought you might be interested in this subject because the government is covering it up and has been covering up the Liberty for 46 years.
Well, I would love it, Josie. As a matter of fact, I know Gina is listening, so if you will, put Josie back on hold and get her number, and you can just shoot me a text to my phone, which I'm being tracked with. I'm going to put it on a bus headed to Boston. Track it down. Yeah, that'd be great. All right, let's get back to some more of your telephone calls right after this quick little break. This is the Sunday night edition of Coast to Coast AM. We shall return momentarily. This is noteworthy, and I want to thank John for sending this story to me. This is from ICE News, posted on the 3rd of December, and it is this. First fatal police shooting in Iceland leaves gunman dead. Police in Iceland announced they shot a gunman dead yesterday in the country's first police killing. While the tragic event may be relatively common in other countries, Iceland's tiny population of 320,000 and its low crime rate and gun-related violence means the police do not usually need to make use of a firearm. As a matter of fact, regular police forces do not carry guns. In a press conference following the incident, the National Commissioner of the Icelandic Police announced the event was unprecedented. Police were called in the early hours on Monday to an apartment building in the usually quiet district of Reykjavik, where a man in his 50s appeared to be firing a shotgun from inside his flat. Police arrived at the scene and evacuated the building. Officers first tried to make contact with the gunman, who was unresponsive, then tried to divert his attention with gas canisters thrown through a broken window, and the man frenzied, started shooting out the apartment window, which prompted the special police force to enter the building at about 6 in the morning. And the gunman opened fire, hit one officer on a shield, another in the helmet, although neither men were seriously injured. And they returned firing, wounding the gunman, who was rushed to the hospital shortly after, but he died a few hours later. Psychological counseling has been offered to the Special Forces team following the tragic event. Quote, police regret the incident and would like to extend their condolences to the family of the man. I'll tell you what's unprecedented is an apology to the police for shooting somebody who was, in this case, kind of asking for it, since he, in the parlance of the day, busted off a couple of caps at the officers, hit one in the shield and the other in the helmet. And they feel bad about it. Contrast that with our police force. In fact, I saw a post recently. It was an email sent to John B. at coasttocoastam.com. J-O-H-N-B is in Bravo at coasttocoastam.com, just in case you want to send one sometime. From Grand Junction, here comes a DHS, Suburban, whatever, Yukon, whatever they're driving. And the man stepped out to take a picture, and this, what do you call him, an officer, an agent, or a fed? That's it. This fed stopped and said, "You got a problem?" He goes, "No, I'm just taking a picture. Is that against the law, too?" And the guy just sat there for about a minute and a half, the fed, that is, until some traffic came up behind him, and he eventually had to move. So, the police have got a hell of a job here, and the reason is that there are so many crazies out there in this country, and it won't do a bit of good to, we need to get rid of all the firearms. No, we don't, because, well, the police, as good as they are, remember, when seconds count, the police are only minutes away. But it's the mentality of the country that has to change in some ways. Yes, we're can-do, improvise, adapt, and overcome kind of people. We really are. But we need to hold on to the noble aspects of the willingness to overcome adversity. And let it, you know, it is said that adversity does not build character, it reveals character. And so when citizens are confronted with adversity, if they react to it in a criminal manner, then their character has been revealed, and that's the part that we need to work on, but maybe it's just me, you know? Maybe. All right, let's talk to Bill in Richmond, Virginia on Wild 5. Bill.
Hello, John. What's how up? Are you?
I'm doing all right, Bill. How are you doing?
Hey, Merry Christmas to you, sir.
Merry Christmas to you a little early. What's going on?
It's getting there quick.
You got this.
I just wanted to say there's a... we experience something a lot of people aren't aware of as Christians. These the game... A lot of people don't realize that game that Tim Tebow had that season, actually. He had a season where when he was with Denver, and of course they... taking him out of football with this great success he had and his popularity, but he had 7 overtime wins that were miraculous. Almost every one of them was a miraculous win at the end, and no one could explain how he was winning. It made no sense. But right. He did pray all the time. You could even hear him mic'd up, and he prayed he wanted the Lord to use him as a platform for the Lord. So he made it back to the playoff game for that year. Unbelievably, they made it into the playoffs to play Pittsburgh in Denver. And Denver has... the white horse at the top of the one side of the stadium where Jesus is coming back on a white horse, and the white horse comes out when they score a touchdown. He just runs around the stadium and that. So they're kind of known for that white horse there. And the opening kickoff hit the crossbar. I never saw one like it before ever in a game. It bounded back 30 yards left field and started and ended up right on the 20, right on the 20-yard line where you start the ball for a touchback. Now, that's the game, if you remember, he has 316 yards passing, 31.6 average per pass completion, set a record there. 31.6% was the ratings, the Nielsen ratings, whatever, the highest peak time of the game. There were all these in 3rd and 16 when Pittsburgh threw an interception on their side of the field to Denver. Now, this halo showed up over the game during the game. And no one's talked much about it. Not only was it a halo, but the girl who put it on the internet originally, it was filmed right at the game, so it was obviously not fake because all the people were, they filmed the winning touchdown, they panned around themselves of all the people, they went right up to the sky and there's this giant halo, and they were all screaming and yelling about the winning touchdown, of course, and the halo. And the one guy reaches down to the people in front of him down there and says, Jesus wrote that. In other words, I guess Jesus wrote that last winning touchdown, that 80-yard pass that was in overtime. That Denver won the game. That's how religious they were at the stadium at that time with the halo up there. And under the halo is this little UFO in the bright corner. When you first see the halo moving up there, you can see this little white object moving under. And a girl, and there's a black cable up there as a webcam. So that's just part of the film's the game. But
well, you got to send me this picture. If you can get a hold of this picture.
Oh, it's on the internet. All you got to do, it's been on there for months, but people see the news media and people don't promote this because it's Christianity related, obviously. So so the deal is, in fact, if you just go on the internet, you just type in Halo, Tebow, and Divine, or Denver, or something like that, you'll see the Halo, and you'll see snapshots of the Halo. You'll see the, now they claim sometimes that some of the smoke went up from the fireworks, but people say they never saw a Halo the whole time, never been there. Even from fireworks, so whether God created a halo out of the fireworks, I don't know, but there's a strong ring around the stadium, and anybody can see it on the video there. And,
all right.
Like I said, it's been on there a long time. And
well, thanks. Thanks for that, man. Listen, Tom Horn and Terry L. Cook are coming up pretty soon. I'm going to mention that to them, and I appreciate your call, and I'm going to Google that thing right now. I want to give you one last little story before we go, because we're getting short on time here, running out of hour. This is from... less chest beating, ABC News. This is by Matthew Dowd on December 5. Hey, no kidding. Thanks for that, Bill. Appreciate you. The question is, a United States spring coming? Talking about time going by, could an Arab Spring type of upheaval be brewing in the United States? Is the frustration and anger toward our dysfunctional politics and economics beginning to reach a tipping point where young folks begin to push for profound change? Has our democracy become so broken that citizens are going to find creative avenues to express their feelings? Will we pass through the holidays and winter of our dysfunction to arrive at a spring of change? Matthew Dowd says, I sense a movement of social unrest growing strongly and quietly toward our own version of the Arab Spring. What do you think? I think so. Go to Full Spectrum Dominance. Put dashes between the words. Full-spectrum-dominance.com and check it out. Okay? Okay. Get yourself a proper cup of tea. Listen to a little news. Pay a little bit of attention to our beloved sponsors. And stand by for Tom Horn and Terry L. Cook on Coast to Coast AM.